perception before you can do the
what is it, 13 years?
Well, 12 to 13 years.
So Rabosa and Lady Robinson, this is the 13th year of our series. We did skip 1 year due to COVID, so it's really the 12th year of our series. And unfortunately, we have a war going on in the Middle East, which involves Israel, which means history is being made as we speak, and it's going to continue. So we probably have like an extra couple years to expand our class to probably about 22 years or something like that. Got pizza and french fries. Don't hesitate to get up and more during the class. We will bench at the end of the class, which will be less than 72 minutes from the time we are starting now, unless the class is really that interesting and we go over time. Right?
I don't think we'll. We never know.
Once again, Rabbi Fried, thank you very much for the class. It's always stimulating and interesting, and we all really appreciate it.
Okay, wonderful. Which lights are we turning on or off? Right, I think we turn. Is that it? Yeah, is this better? This is good. Everybody could see. Okay. Welcome everybody. Tonight it is November 11th. 2024. Veterans Day. This is the first.
I think it's still 23, but I'm not certain.
Oh, it's 2023. 23, 24, 6. Right. It's November 11th, 2023. And it's the first of this year. We titled it The French Revolution. Now, if you wanted to point to something that... If it was one event that caused, like the repercussions of the event caused the modern era in the Western world, and also caused the situation of the Jewish people where we are now with all streams of all types of Jews, and the idea of secular Jews or, you know, non-religious Jews, secular Jews, conservative, reform, but probably the event that you can arguably say is the biggest cause to all this was the French Revolution. The French Revolution, as we'll see, what I hope to first do is first just go through the French Revolution, just what happened, and then get into Napoleon, because Napoleon was the continuation or the larger French Revolution. But what happened is the ideals that came out, that were there, that were brewing among the people, not necessarily Jews, although it was, these ideas were among the Jews as well, but it came to the forefront, and the entire nation, a nation of France, was swept up with these ideals of fraternity and freedom, and something that was so new that, you know, in the philosophical world that was there, but it was what you would call the old order. This was a world of kings. It was a world of nobles, of privileged classes. It was a world of most of the people were peasants, so they were workers. And this came to the forefront through this revolution. And then this ideas and ideals were carried from France to basically all the way to Moscow. You know, we're going to see Napoleon actually made it to Moscow, which is an amazing. So wherever he went, the French army came, and it had a very, very big, it had an effect on everybody and everything. So what Hashem decided to do in the late 1700s was like, turn everything on its head. And, you know, if not for the French Revolution, you know, things would have just, you know, continued as it were, maybe a little bit at a time, but just all of a sudden, all these things came out. And we're going to see how, in terms of the Jews, it really had a major effect, because those people that had different ideas of what Judaism should look like, Yiddishkeit should look like, they used the mapecha, they used the turnover, they used the time that they had when France was controlling these countries, and they used it to their advantage to push forth their agendas. And to, as we'll go through, we'll see all these different things happening. So, and this really all started with the French Revolution. It changed the secular world as well. Well, okay, so the French Revolution, I would say if you wanted to take a look, there's a map. And this is what the map would have looked like pretty much before the French Revolution. If you're noticing, let's see, do I have my thing? Oh, it does work. Okay. So here's France, and this area here is known as the Holy Roman Empire. As you can see at this time in the late 1700s, the Austrian Empire was massive. Prussia is also getting itself, and there's still probably about 200-300 different city-states in the Holy Roman Empire, which is bordering France. Poland is not going to last another 5 years, 10 years, and it's going to be swallowed up by Russia, Austria, Prussia, and there's not going to be nothing left of Poland. Okay, here's the Ottoman Empire. This is the Muslims, and okay, Spain, Portugal. This is what it looked like. When you go 10 years later, 15 years later, this is what the map is going to look like. Here's France. Now, anything that was blue, which is Spain, a good part of the Holy Roman Empire, Germany, with today's Germany, is all, and Naples, Corsica, by the way, that's where Napoleon is from. So I'm actually going to say that this is where Napoleon was born. So then you have the yellow, which is Austria and Prussia. They were allied with French. And then the green is independent or enemies. Just a similar, you'll just get another idea. You'll see how big Napoleon's empire was. Like, you know, this is France, and this is all the way into Germany. So you see all the way to the other side of Austria, and I think this is, if not the Ukraine, it's close. But again, he's going to swallow up where most of the Jews, the Ashkenazic Jews in the world, lived in this area. Mm-hmm. This was just, you know, so every Rebbe, Hasidisha Rebbe, every rabbi, you know, every congregation is going to have to deal with these new ideas that are coming forth. And that was the challenge, you know. Do you side with Napoleon, you know, or do you not side with Napoleon? Siding with Napoleon, you may free yourself from the Tsar and his terrible anti-Semitic government, but then you have to deal with Napoleon, these new ideas of freedom, and that also is, all those ideas are against what the Torah was about. But so you take a look here, and this was pretty much all under France. You know, here are the Allies, dependent states. Okay, but that's going to happen towards the end, and in the very beginning, we just are in France. So the way the old regime looked like, there were three estates. Okay, you had the high-ranking members of the church. They were the first estate, and the second estate was the nobility, and the third estate was everybody else. Most of them were peasants, but you had the bourgeoisie. This was the like merchants, and these were people that would be there. They could have been wealthy, but they weren't nobles, and they could have, some of them could have even been more wealthy than nobles. But since they did not come from nobility, they were in the third estate, and we're going to see why. They're going to have to pay taxes where nobility doesn't. Okay, so this is the way it looked like. The first, if you just take a look at the population, you'll get an idea on how a lopsided this was. The population of the first estate, which were the high-ranking clergy, was about 130,000. Nobles, about 110,000. And the third estate was about 25 million. So that's where everybody was, as opposed to, so you had this, the privileged few were ruling the rest of the Hamonamut. In certain respects, not so much different than here in America, if you look at it in a certain way. All right, as you can see, the privileges, they collected the taxes and they censored the press. This is the first estate. They kept all the records and they owned 20% of all the land. They didn't pay taxes. They were subject to church law rather than civil law. The nobles, they also collected taxes in terms of feudal dues. They had monopolized military and state appointments, and as all the officers came from the nobles, they owned 20% of the land. Also, they paid no taxes. And then this was everybody else. No privileges, no exemptions, and they're the ones that basically paid all the taxes. Okay, that's the way it was on the eve, right before the French Revolution. There's also an understanding what was the understanding of the king and nobility in those days. So really it was the kings ruled by divine right. Europe back then was a lot more religious than it was today, and they believed that if God made these people kings, and that's it. They were kings because Hashem wanted them to be kings. And if you can't question that. If you question that, it's sacrilege. You apikoros. You don't believe in Hashem. So again, you can't question it, and if you do, that's blasphemy. You mean you're questioning Hashem. So Hashem put the king in power, and if you're questioning that the king being in power, then you're questioning Hashem. That's you're questioning God.
We're talking about Goyim, though, right?
Goyim.
So they weren't referring to Hashem, they were just...
God, I just said the word Hashem.
Probably meant something else.
You're right. Okay, so. So what did the king do? His jobs were, he appointed... Now, France was divided into 30 districts, and he put all of these, he appointed all the governors over these districts. He appointed people who would collect his taxes, judges, the king would make judges, and means, the type of judges he would want, that's who he appointed. Yeah, of course, he was in charge of the military, the king. He could imprison anybody for anything, that's it, arrests. The king did not need a warrant, like here we have in America. He made all the taxes, decided who's paying the taxes and how he's going to spend the money, made all the laws, and made decisions regarding do we go to war or not. This was all the king. The people were just, that's it, they were puppets. They had no say basically in anything. France was mostly an agricultural society. And most of the tax were borne by the peasants, the people who worked. If there was a famine, and that's one of the reasons that led to the French Revolution, was it was a terrible famine and nobody had food and they had to pay taxes and the kings were spending a lot. But and the bourgeoisie, the rich, the merchants, those that were able to collect money, they were upset, like, why are we paying taxes and not the noble? Okay. Louis the 16th, he's the king of France, and he's spending a lot of money. His wife was Marie Antoinette, right? The She was also a big spender, huh? Right, let him eat cake. Right, let him eat cake. That was her thing. So she was also the daughter of Marie Theresa, who was the queen or of Austria. So she was that daughter, and when she died, her brother was the king of Austria. So, and that was a big, big deal because you had two big royal homes. One was a Habsburg, I think that was from, and I forgot the name of the house of France. And that big shidduch, they had like big, big, ideas, you know. Hassan goes, ooh, we got such a shidduch going on. And, okay, but this is that was the queen. And they were spending, it came across that she was spending like everything is fine. Meanwhile, the country is, there's no money in the country. People are starving, the people are broke. And the king and queen, you see the luxury, the lavishness that they're living in. The government was definitely spending more money than they were bringing in. There were a few wars. The wars are very expensive. They also, the French, they had also spent a lot of money supporting the American Revolution. They were at war at that time with Britain, with England, and so they were spending a lot, not bringing in too much. Things that caused the French Revolution was, again, bankruptcy, deficit spending. They actually got the notables all together, all the nobles, and they say, no, we need some more money, how about paying taxes? And all the nobles took a vote. All right, all us nobles that want to pay taxes, all those that want to pay taxes, raise your hand. All that don't want to pay taxes, raise your hand. They all raised their hand, and that was it. So they couldn't get the nobles to pay taxes. It was a very, very big, there in fact was a famine, and you know, because it's primarily agriculture, you're not making crops, and you don't have money to pay. So Louis the 16th had no choice. He was stuck because he needed money. So what they used to do, and you know, again, the last time they had a problem was in 1614, which is about more than 150 years earlier. So what you do is you call in all the people. They bring in their representatives and you negotiate with them. All right, look, we need more money. What could we do for you? Well, we want this and this. Okay, so you negotiate. We need more money, and you will give you more rights. And that's what they did last time. So Louis the 16th had no other choice, and they called a big meeting. Okay, and they called it. It was originally called the Estates General. And they had to find a problem. How do you fix the bankruptcy problem? So they all three of the estates met. They all had representatives. I don't know how they picked their representatives, but they all had their representatives. All right, so the only thing is they had to figure out, how do you vote, right? You got three estates. So are you gonna vote by estate? Each estate gets one vote. So the first estate gets a vote, second estate gets a vote, and the third estate gets one vote. Mm. Well, if that's the case, what's going to happen? The first two estates are going to win over the third estate, even though the first two estates together don't even have 500,000 people, and the third estate has like 24 million people. If you want to... Oh, never mind. Somebody else. Okay, so that was the problem. However, the third estate said, no, we don't want to vote that way. We want to vote by the popular vote. Let's people vote that way. And they came to an impasse. So this was an impasse. They said, what do we do? So the third estate decided, and this is, as you could see, This is what one vote, 130, 110,000, and 25 million. They're only giving us one vote. Early on in Israel, while they were under Palestine, they also had such a situation where at the time there were more Haredim than secular, but the secular decided to vote by city. So Yerushalayim that had like so much, they were only giving Yerushalayim one vote. You know, so, you know, like a very similar situation where Tel Aviv and Haifa, they each got a vote and Yerushalayim also just got one vote. So, you know, I don't remember exactly where or how, in what context it was, but that was like an issue where, you know, like, okay. But that was the same idea. Okay, so what happened is they basically decided to, you know, make themselves, okay, we're having our own, you know, they decided we are going to be called the National Assembly. This is the third estate. They said, who cares about the other two estates? And we're making our own assembly. Well, when that happened, Louis the 16th locked them out of the room. That's it. It was a lockout. You can't, you want to, you're having your own estate, you're having your own, you know, assembly, not with the first and the second estate. So he threw them out. That's it. Locked them out. Go away. So they went down the hall. They went down the road to a tennis court, and that's where they met. I guess it was big enough for them to, and that's where they met. And when they got there, they actually like made they got some machlis together, and they said, no, we're going to stay together. We're not going to give in to this. They swore an allegiance that we're gonna stay as one, okay? And we're gonna make a pot. We're gonna make a constitution, we're gonna have our demands.
Just noting the date. This is only like 12 years after the United States managed to leave England.
Yeah. Right. So that was one of the inspirations. Were successful revolutions with like the United States, and there was another one that they were, and so they too were also like, you know, hey, it's in the air. There people are okay. On the long terms is actually what you said over here. Absolutism. They didn't like the social system. They get all the privileges. What about us? Poor harvests. The influence of this brotherhood, fraternity, and you know, also things was the mercantilism system. Now I'm not exactly sure what the mercantilism system was, but the government did control the trade, from my understanding. If anybody is more familiar, but the idea was that trade, each state wanted. When they made trades, it had to be favorable for the country itself. So if France is making a trade with another country, they're only going to make the trade if it's favorable for France. England is going to do the same thing. And the colonies, you could use your colonies, a game like a chess and whatever, use your colonies to help you. So, but basically what that did, it limited a lot of trades. It wasn't free market, because if I have a great trade, if I'm an individual and I want to trade with a certain country, but at the end of the day, the money is going to go in the other direction, and France or whatever country it was is not going to end up with as much money. They don't feel it's favorable. They're not going to allow the trade to happen. So a lot of the traders and merchants, they all felt this is, you know, you're hurting them. And, well, we want a free market system, and it was taken over. But this is the pre, before the capital system, which did lead into capitalism. But this was the idea of the time, and they didn't like that. Also, you had England had two revolutions: the Glorious Revolution, 1688 to 1689. Is that Oliver Cromwell? I think that was, and then the American Revolution. Okay, so now tennis court oath, and I think this was the oath. National Assembly, considering that it has been summoned to establish a constitution of the kingdom. So again, the people wanted a constitution. Yeah, just the Americans came up with a great constitution. They had what to work with now, even. To effect the regeneration of the public order, to maintain true principles of monarchy. They weren't at this point, they were willing to work with a monarchy, but they wanted a constitution for themselves. Nothing can prevent it from continuing its deliberations in whatever place it may be forced to establish itself. Like, no matter where we're going to go, even though we can't do it in the government, with the we're going to, wherever it is, Finally, whatsoever its members are assembled, there is a national assembly. Decrees that all members of the assembly shall immediately take a solemn oath not to separate and to reassemble wherever circumstances require until the constitution of the kingdom is established and consolidated upon firm foundations, and that the said oath taken, all members and each one of them individually shall ratify the steadfast resolution by signatures, and they all signed it. So now you have the third estate really together, and they have in mind, they want a constitution. Okay, so these are going to be the four steps of the revolution. So first, right now we're in the National Assembly time, and then it's going to come to the Legislative Assembly, Convention, and Directory. So we're going to just right now we're still by the National Assembly. I'm not sure. It's a quick question, but.
Was the United States the first one to come up with the idea of a constitution?
No, I don't think so, but they were one of the first very successful revolutions of all time. I mean, it's probably the most successful I'm sure we'll get to the American Revolution. We'll go back to America, but okay. National Assembly, so what basically Louis XVI was forced to bring him back in. Of course, you have to realize that he did not want a constitution, right? That was what the king really did not want. And they didn't have veto power because, you know, the third estate would come up with the constitution and the first two estates would say, no, thank you, but no, thank you. But they didn't have that anymore. So the rumor had it that the king was now going to, you know, arrest or get the army and get the third, this estate that's working on a constitution, when it came clear that the king didn't want the constitution, and they were afraid that the king was going to either kill them all or throw them all in jail or do whatever. So that's it, they word got out. And that's it. They rebelled and revolted in the whole city of France, and that's called Bastille Day because they actually made their way into the armory and they got themselves weapons, and they took to the streets. They think they were like different areas. I think they were called communes, a commune. So the Parisians, the people from Paris, organized their own government, which they called commune. And these small factions started to compete for the control of France. These uprisings spread to the rest of France, and the nobles basically, that's, you know, they left. They left town. The church also left town. Louis XVI was not as fortunate. He was not able to leave town, but he basically was a prisoner at first in Versailles, which was near Paris. But then they wanted him closer at hand. They were actually afraid, even from the first time, they were afraid that the king would skip the country. And if the king would skip the country, he would be able to get other countries to attack. And that was a big, big fear of France, because here they are, they overran the king. And all these other countries were starting to look, and they say, well, look what happened. Look what happened in the American Revolution, and now France, if we don't do something, that spirit of revolution is going to come to all these other countries. Mm-hmm. And Spain will fall, and Austria, and Prussia, and Russia, and all these countries now had a... They were very nervous. Oh my God, what are we going to do? The people in France were also nervous that people within France, you know, mainly nobles and clergy, would, you know, help with the counter-revolution, help with the outside armies. In October of 1789, they forced the king to move back to Paris. So they wanted a careful eye on the king. They didn't want to allow him to escape. That's what they did. So this is the National Assembly. So now they made a whole bunch of changes. So now we have a National Assembly. They came up with some sort of constitution. The king is now in one of his palaces in France, and chaos is in the street. Most of the nobles and clergy had already left town. And now what do you have? First of all, the abolishment of guilds and trade unions. Anything that had to do with the old order. The abolition of special privileges. So no such thing as a noble, no such thing as a clergy getting off on taxes. Everybody is the same. They made a constitution. Declaration of Rights of Man, we'll get back to that in a second. Equality before the law. Nobles left. Reform in local government. And taxes were based on the ability to pay. Okay, so this is a great start for a new government picture. This is the National Assembly in Paris. So this is from 1789. It's going to go to 1791. And people were coming, they would speak, and people were listening inside, there were people outside, and if they liked what the speaker said, they cheered, and if they didn't like, they hissed. And that's it. People kept getting up, and people getting. That's it. This is the government now for these 2 years. Well, Declaration of Rights of Man, freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of press, guaranteed property rights. This is and of course this is the famous liberty, equality, fraternity. That was the rights of the people to create laws and right to a fair trial. Very democratic principles. Women. They wanted more rights too. They didn't get too much. They got two things, but not because they wanted to give the rights to women, but because they wanted to knock the church and they wanted to knock the old regime. So, for example, in the old regime, women could not inherit. So they wanted to weaken feudalism, so they said, okay, women could inherit. And divorce became easier because they wanted to weaken the church's control. So right now, in a religious sense, anything religion was really out. And the Jews also are going at this stage, you know, they're working so hard to get accepted. And at this point of the revolution, the Jews were, synagogues were closed. They were taken in because, you know, they were lumped together with all the churches, with religion. Mm-hmm. So it's, at this point, religion took a hit. And it was very hard for the Jews to do things. They sieged, again, churches were out. They seized the lands of churches. Civil constitution of the clergy required that church officials be elected by the people. Their salaries paid by the government. 2/3 of church officials actually left. Feudal dues and tithes were, that's it, no more. And special privileges were removed. Again, it's an attack on religion. They took the 30 provinces that the king had and they made them into 83. 83 provinces, sorry, 83. And that's it, they elected leaders as opposed to being appointed by the king. New courts. They made at this point still, the king had not yet been beheaded. So there was a monarchy and they made it a limited monarchy. All those, but this legislative, assembly after the Constitution. Okay, so the Constitution came in 1791. We now have the Constitution, and we're now moving from the Constitution ratified, and it's no longer called the National Assembly, but it's now called the Legislative Assembly. So now the Constitution, whatever that Constitution was, it took 2 years for them to get it together, and now we're in stage two. Now we're in the legislative. It was mostly democratic, but voting was limited to taxpayers. Offices reserved for property owners. Again, you can imagine many or most people still had that issue. You know, if you didn't pay taxes or you don't have land, you still can't vote. So now we're in the next one. Now, during this time, two parties seemed to form. Okay, you had the, I know it's called the Jacobins, but what is it, the Girondists? How do you say this, anybody? The Girondists. So the Girondists was more with the upper class, like the more the rich, these were property owners, these were people that had businesses and jobs, more found themselves in the Girondists, and the Jacobins more represented the poor people. The poor people were more on the radical side. And at this point, Now they were really afraid, 2 years in with a constitution and now a limited monarch, they were really afraid of outside attacks. In fact, the King Louis the 16th tried to escape. And he was caught. You know how he was caught? They got in a wagon and they were going, and the king stuck his head out the window to look at something. And somebody recognized the king.
Oh, wow.
So he quickly ran in and he said, "Hey, I think the king's escaping," and they got the king, and then that's it, they locked him up. So now already after 2 years in, all the forces outside are going to start to attack France.
Mm.
And they're not gonna, you know, because they want to restore the old order because they don't want the revolution to spread to them. This is in fact, you know, they stopped the royal coach. All right, so what happened is in fact France was invaded by Austrian and Prussian troops that would have been from the east of France. And it took, because of this, the Commune took control of Paris. The Commune was led by Danton, a leader of the Jacobin Party. They started to elect representatives, and at this point now, they started what we would call the Reign of Terror, because the government now is first going to be taken over by Danton and later a famous guy named Robespierre, and they're going to end up killing 15,000 people in the course of a year, or a little over a year, 15,000. Whoever they felt, originally it was like, it was supposed to be the Committee of Public Safety, and public safety, they were afraid that these people were in cahoots with all the other countries, and therefore they had to be killed, you know, we don't want them to destroy us. So he basically, but in reality it was anybody who spoke against Danton and then Robespierre, they were put to death, they were guillotined. Among everybody, they guillotined the king and his wife, Marie Antoinette. Their 10-year-old son, they didn't guillotine him, but they mistreated him to such a point that he ended up dying of mistreatment. The daughter, Maria Theresa, named after her grandmother, they allowed her to leave because their laws were that girl can't take the throne. They were afraid, you know, if there's a royal family, they're gonna want to fight to get the throne back. But now we killed the king, the queen, the kid, and there's nobody left. And the girl, so we don't have to kill her, so they sent her out of the country. But there were any nobles that they felt were communicating with outside countries, they suspected them of treason and they killed them all. So at this point, France was being attacked by Austria, England, Holland, Prussia, Sardinia, Spain. And this was, I think, called the first coalition against Spain. There's going to be three against France. There's going to be like three in total. So this is the Committee on Public Safety, and they're killing everybody now. It's a reign of this is the Reign of Terror. They finally did this on the other one. This is what they did. They had a guillotine and they were just killing people right and left. Eventually, you know, like the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is, because you drowned this other person, you're going to get drowned yourself. And that's what they did. And finally, the French people had enough of this. They were sick of this, and they guillotined Robespierre. And well, Danton first, he said, "Okay, this is crazy, stop. You know, no more guillotining." So Robespierre guillotined Danton. You know, "Oh, you don't agree about it?" You know. And then finally they just guillotined anybody who was part of this. During this time though, they had a a draft into the army. It wasn't everybody had to go in the army. It was like a, an emergency time. And this is where the French this is the French national anthem. That's when this came out. Okay, but in fact, the French were able to hold themselves, and they defeated the armies that were invading. And if anything, they actually gained more land. Okay, so this is this is all during the Reign of Terror, when the outside enemies stopped, when the outside attack stopped, and then they were able to stop the inside. So now you had a little bit of a rest.
The majority of Europe at this point was all monarch.
Yeah.
That's absolutely why they were rising up. This was radical. Radical in Europe.
For its time, very radical.
That's why they sent us the Statue of Liberty. They approved.
They did it. The King of France helped the American Revolution, and then the people in France said, "Hey, what's good for the goose? It's good for the gander. Hey, let's do it here."
But they were the pioneer of Europe.
In Europe itself. Actually, in England, there was the Oliver Cromwell in the 1680s, but that didn't last. It was bloodless.
Unlike England, is there any concept of monarchy anymore? Is there any kingship in France?
I don't know.
England kept Spain.
Spain, they all do have monarchs, or many monarchs, but I think it's only ceremonial. All right, so the end of the Reign of Terror, they finally just killed all the, got rid of the public safety, killed everybody, and now we now go to the year 1795, and this is like the last part. This is the last of the Reign of Terror. Okay, so now they came up with a new government. This is the government under the new constitution. So the government had three branches, actually two branches, but the executive branch, which had five directors appointed by the legislator. The legislator had a lower house and an upper house. This sounds very familiar to what we have here in the United States. Now the qualifications were that you had to have you had to be a property owner to vote. And I guess the reason why the Girondists did this is because the Jacobins, which were mainly from the poor and was so radical and they killed everybody, they didn't want to go back to that radicalness again. So they said, let's get people that are more stable, and those are people that are owners, they have a lot more to lose if they're property owners than, people that don't have. Okay, so there were 500 members in the lower house, 250 in the upper house, and originally two-thirds of these would be, so about 500 of the 750 would be from people from the legislative assembly. So they would come in, they'd vote in one-third of them would be voted in, and eventually the votes, they would all be voted in.
Sounds familiar a little.
Yeah, no, that's right.
Our Congress and our Senate.
Right, so they probably copied a lot from what they saw in America. They had a system that was working. It was a good system, and they borrowed. Other things passed by the convention, the metric system. They finally said that there was a system in Europe, and maybe in many places today, is that the oldest son gets everything. Right, so they got rid of that. They drew up a comprehensive system of laws, ended debt imprisonment, ended slavery in France colonies, and established a nationwide system of public education. So you see, France is, it's moving towards a modern era. They call itself now, it's going to be called a republic, as opposed to the... Now, the problem with the 1795 to 1799 is that it didn't work, or it didn't work as well as French people wanted it to work. And again, there's a lot of kinks to work out in the beginning. There was corruption, poor administration. France grew poorer. There was no way, there weren't, you know, the economy wasn't picking up yet. There was so, it happened to be, still nationalism was very high. I guess you could imagine the French, they were all, they had this new experiment, they had this revolution going, and they were, you know, they were invested in it. So they had this tremendous amount of pride, and part of the pride was military success. And now we're gonna come, we're gonna start to meet a person that really, really helped, and that's gonna be Napoleon Bonaparte. He came to power through a coup d'etat. It was a, he took over, he, it was a rebellion within, and basically he made, he kept the form of that government, but he made himself like over it. And eventually he was the real power behind everything. And eventually he just got rid of it. He became everything. You know, they just removed the facade that there were directors and there's a legislation, and it really became all him.
Was he referred to as what? A dictator?
Yeah, eventually an emperor. He eventually became emperor. Before he became emperor, he had a different name to himself. At first consulate, I think. Okay, so this is really what we're going to come up to. Now, Napoleon Bonaparte, he is an outsider. He's not from any royal family. He's not from nobles. He basically was, he worked his way up in the military. He was a genius. He was a military genius. And he came in at the right time. From what I understand, again, I'm not in any of these military schools, but from what I understand, they are still studying his tactics. Mm-hmm. He was amazing he understood the battlefields. He knew how to use his big guns. He knew how much men he needed. He knew how to attack, and he was taking on armies 2-3 times his size. There was no real stopping him. But basically, they stopped him is they. He made a big mistake, and his big mistake was attacking Russia, right?
Yeah. In the winter.
Well, he started. You know, it wasn't winter, but he stayed a little too long in Moscow, and that's because he really thought that the Tsar of Russia would just come to him and talk peace terms. We'll discuss why he attacked Russia, and you know, all his accomplishments, one after the other, and you know, he just, besides, we'll talk about this next week too, besides being a military genius, he also got the country going. And I guess they really needed, you know, a one person that was able to remove the corruption and to just get the economy going and to use his force, and he was a hero, you know, and his just put it all together. I really see a lot of familiarities with Trump, you know, because I'm just in a serious way, because Trump is an outsider and Napoleon was an outsider. Mm. He's a person from the people. They both were from the people. They weren't from the old order or the air in our system. The, you know, this. Well, he's removing the swamp. He fights against the corruption. Like I do see, like, you know, he's a strong individual, and you know, so I see in a certain respect, yeah, you know, what Napoleon accomplished internally and what Trump accomplished, you know, I happen to see a little bit like similarities, you know. Okay, I'm sure a lot of not similarities, but in that respect, I think it was. I think you have that. Okay, so next week I'd like to talk about Napoleon, because it's also going to be Napoleon and the Jews itself. Personally.
I was wondering how this is going to tie
okay.
together.
Okay, so now, first of all, you have these ideas of anti-old order. That's first, and that's going to be when the French are going to go all out and take over Europe. These ideals are now going to be, you know, not contained and not, you know, from the press and taken away, but they're going to see it firsthand. So Napoleon, wherever he goes, he's going to knock down the ghetto walls. Wherever he goes, he's going to make a Sanhedrin. Napoleon. He is going to. He makes his way to Palestine, you know, to Akko. But you know, he ran out of time. There. He had to get back, and that's. He almost. You know, he was in Egypt. He was all over. And we're going to see how what he does, and when he takes over these countries, he puts a lot of his brothers and sisters in these countries. And the way he dealt with the Jews in France is the way that they dealt with the Jews in those countries, which we're going to see is going to give a big, big foothold to those Jews that want to modernize Yiddishkeit. And they're going to use the governments that
are you going to explain his pastry?
Not at all. I wish, if anybody here wants to help him with the, you know. All right, thank you very, very much. And Amir Hashem, we'll just continue this. Napoleon is going to be the first who he is and then how it deals with the Jewish people.
Now it's not revenge, but there is dessert. Yeah,
okay. Now I see how the pizza came in. You see, part of Italy was France also under him.
That's right. He conquered Italy.
He had the whole coast there along the.
That's where he got his fame. He just was on.
You go into Italy and take part of their country. He must have been doing something. The Italians didn't like any other.
Okay. Let me just end this, okay?